From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, New York State Senate Republican leader says he's not happy with what he says is over $800 million in new taxes and fees in the governor's budget. Political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on the governor's plan and steps are being taken at state and local levels to stay fears of roundups and mass deportations under the Trump administration. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. The leader of the state Senate Republicans says he's not happy with what he says is over $800 million in new taxes and fees tucked away in Governor Andrew Cuomo's new state budget. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt explains.
Senate Majority Leader John Flanagan says he's upset about new fees proposed in Governor Cuomo's budget that a preliminary analysis shows total $803 million, $250 million in new Department of Motor Vehicle fees alone. Flanagan says he's also not happy with the way Cuomo presented his spending plan to lawmakers. Flanagan says in a private briefing at the Executive Mansion, Cuomo failed to mention all of the new fees.
I'm not going to dance around it. I was very surprised to see, you know, when you tell me there's basically nothing and then there's $250 million in new fees, that's important for the public to know, and that's important for it to be part of our discussion.
The fees and other revenue raisers include increases for titles for cars and trucks, capping the STAR property tax rebates, and new taxes on cigars and e-cigarettes. Flanagan says those new taxes and fees will balloon to $4.5 billion a year in the 2020-2021 fiscal year. A spokesman for Governor Cuomo says the Senate's numbers are misleading. Spokesman Rich Azzopardi says the $803 million includes the extension of the so-called millionaire's tax, which is worth just under $700 million. A top tax rate of 8% would continue under the governor's plan instead of being reduced to around 6% later this year.
The Senate Republicans' new tax is an extension of the millionaire's tax, and they're saying they'd rather give a tax break to millionaires than a tax cut to the middle class and more money to our schools.
Governor Cuomo gave three speeches in Plattsburgh, Syracuse, and Niagara Falls. He did not take any questions, but he repeated large portions of his State of the State and budget messages, including his call for the extension of the tax on the rich. Cuomo says it would finance middle-class tax cuts approved by the governor and legislature last year and help to pay for a $1 billion increase in school aid.
I want to extend that tax so the millionaire tax rate doesn't drop and use that money in part to fund the middle class tax cut.
Senator Flanagan says he realizes that the governor will expect senators to come up with alternative ways to cut costs if they ultimately reject any of the new taxes and fees, including the millionaire's tax.
The governor's going to say, well, if you don't like this, you got to either give me something else or we're going to have to cut spending.
Flanagan says the Senate will have some ideas in its One House budget plan. That's going to be released in a few weeks. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Well, Alan, we were listening to comments by New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio as, quote, sanctuary city mayors are now defying Trump's immigration order, including Boston's mayor, who said he'd take the folks into the city hall. Yeah, too.
Well, we do know that this country is basically divided. Hillary Clinton got more votes than Donald Trump did, by almost 3 million votes. We also know California, New York, Massachusetts, these are very blue states. And here's Trump coming along with the kind of red meat that he was throwing to the anti-immigration community and saying, if you harbor these people, you're in real trouble, we'll take your money away. And that, of course, leads to a problem for the people who run these states because budgets are tight. We know that Andrew Cuomo has talked about if the Affordable Care Act collapses, if Medicaid money is taken away from New York, there will be a tremendous hole in the budget. So as I have said before, Cuomo has to be walking around with two buckets on his shoulders trying to balance them. One is to keep Trump at bay and not have him punish New York or Massachusetts or California. And the other is to his political constituency. And Cuomo in New York has, for example, had tremendous problems with his left-wing flank. So this is why he's got to do this balancing act. So one of the problems between Cuomo and de Blasio in New York is that they're both fighting for that same left group. De Blasio has less to worry about, although they can take a lot of money away from New York City one way or the other. So in order to protect those immigrants who are being sheltered, it's going to take a certain amount of courage. Now, along comes the federal government, and they start to arrest people in a city. They go into houses, and they take people away. Is it going to come to that? I suspect it may. And then you're going to really see a certain amount of chaos.
Meantime, he's got to get a budget passed through the legislature, and that's not going well. As of late, he's fighting with many of the lawmakers, largely a result we're hearing because of not getting the pay raise that the commission shot down. They are at a breakfast this week, and many express their frustration over that. And now the governor says he wants to meet fortnightly with the lawmakers on a regular basis to improve relations. We've also witnessed him bypassing the legislature, going around the state this week and presenting his budget proposals from Plattsburgh in the North Country to Rochester. He's got visits all over the state, Kingston this week as well. And the idea that he can get anything done seems to be on pause right now.
Well, look, as our wonderful friend Blair Horner, who is one of the senior lookers at New York State government, has said, he's zigging and he's zagging. And he's got to be zigging and zagging. On the one hand, people hate the legislature. On the other hand, he has to do business with them. You know, the idea that they hate him is palpable. It's one thing to be dealing in social policy. It's another when he doesn't want to give you a pay raise and is responsible for you not getting the pay raise. Well, right now, he's got to pass a budget. So right now, the zig and the zag has got to be in one direction that he might not ordinarily do. He's got to keep them happy, and somehow he's got to get them to come along and pass the budget on time. Now, in New York, on-time budgets, David, have been the big bugaboo. People don't know a thing about state government, or very little. Most of them don't even know who their legislators are. But they do know when they can't pass a budget on time. So they finally came to their senses and they started to pass on-time budgets. But now this legislature is so angry at Cuomo, God knows what they're going to do.
Well, let's stay with Blair Horner from NYPERG, who gave testimony at hearings this week on higher education. Of course, the governor, one of his big plans is to give free college tuition at the public colleges in New York State. And Blair says the devil's in the details. It doesn't seem as if in the end the benefits are as wide.
Well, he points out that there's a tuition rise for people in who are going to SUNY and CUNY, and that it's sort of hypocritical, at least that's what I take away, from saying on the one hand you're going to give free tuition to everybody under $125,000, and then the details are you got to take a full 15 credits, you got to get out in a certain time, otherwise this will be denied to you. When I went to Hunter College in the Bronx, it was free, and I mean free. If you flunked out, you flunked out, but it was free. And that's what we ought to be doing because, as you know, David, and everybody else, we say this is a land of equality and opportunity. And here we have a situation, which is that you can go to primary school, you can go to elementary school, high school, junior high school, but not to college. Well, how can you have equality of opportunity if you can't go to college? Well, Cuomo knows it, so he proposes something. But the wonderful Blair Horner says, who represents NYPERG, and NYPERG has a lot of students in it, look, there are some real problems here.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Thank you. are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Your Governor Cuomo continued to tour the state this week, outlining his budget proposals. On Monday, he outlined his proposed state spending plan to a North Country audience, highlighting what he says are the plan's benefits for the upstate region and announcing plans to enhance tourism venues in the Adirondacks. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley was there.
New York's governor began outlining his budget a week and a half ago and is highlighting regional initiatives at venues across the state. In a stop Monday in Plattsburgh, he reiterated its emphasis on less spending, fewer taxes, and more investment in upstate and the North Country.
This year, our focus should be on the working men and women of New York. I want to cut taxes for the middle class. I want to reduce property taxes. Do the first ever in the country college affordability plan for the middle class, create more jobs, reduce prescription drugs.
Governor Cuomo then focused on targeted investments for the North Country, noting that tourism is the major economic driver for the region. He is proposing reinvestments in the Whiteface and Gore ski resorts, whose facilities he called outdated.
The state will invest $5 million to extend and expand lodges, $3 million to renovate the Adirondack Base Lodge, $4 million to install a lift, Whiteface, $3.5 million to build one of the longest zip lines in North America, and $5 million to build the longest mountain coaster in the United States. Gore Mountain, $2 million, expand seating, $5 million to add a third story, $1 million to restore the original gondola. If we make this investment, then we want to partner with private sector management companies. We think we can leverage $80 million and remake these facilities.
Cuomo told business and community leaders that another key investment in the North Country will be the creation of a gateway to the Adirondacks at the former frontier town in North Hudson.
$32 million to redevelop the existing property as a multi-use facility, camping, access to Schroon Lake, dining, lodging, hiking, preserve the history of Frontier Town, but really build a new gateway facility to the Adirondacks.
Lake Placid-based Regional Office of Sustainable Tourism President Jim McKenna says the improvements the governor envisions will help make Whiteface a year-round resort.
That's going to not only help the general economy of Wilmington and hopefully drive some lodging investment, but it'll help the bottom line of Orta, which is needed. Sort of rounds out the year-round activities for those venues, and I think that was a remarkable and a visionary type of movement, and it's really needed right now there. So that's excellent. And then the other major one is Frontier Town. What's been on the drawing board from the governor's office in D.C. and the five towns is going to transform that area as well. So I think that those two projects that he identified, one in North Hudson and one in Wilmington, is going to change the dynamic of those communities.
The governor briefly discussed $38 million in new state investment in the Plattsburgh International Airport. Town of Plattsburgh Supervisor Michael Cashman says that is one of a number of items in the plan that excites him.
The Plattsburgh International Airport's investment really is going to continue to allow businesses to cross-pollinate, to find opportunities to get those products well beyond, you know, our borders of the North Country. But I'm also excited about something that maybe some people overlooked, and that's, I think, approximately $2 billion in water infrastructure. We want to make sure that we have good pipes, we have good water, so that it's about the economic development, the economic sustainability of the businesses that are here, and the health and safety. So that's something that I actually gleaned onto beyond the traditional infrastructure of the airport, etc.
According to the Plattsburgh North Country Chamber of Commerce, the state has invested more than $275 million in economic development projects in the greater Plattsburgh area in the past 9 months.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
In advance of expected changes in federal immigration enforcement practices and priorities under President Donald Trump, advocates fear millions of people could be affected. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports steps are being taken at state and local levels to stay fears of roundups and mass deportations.
Last Thursday, New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman gave local governments and law enforcement agencies a legal roadmap for improving public safety by protecting vulnerable immigrant communities. It includes various model laws and policies that, if voluntarily enacted by a local government, would codify sanctuary policies into local law. Several cities across New York, including Syracuse and New York City, have adopted such policies. Kingston is working on one. Latino Justice Pearl Def and Demos have released a report designed to give jurisdictions and institutions guidance for establishing policies that welcome and protect immigrants. Kathy Culleton-Gonzalez is senior counsel at Demos.
The first part of the study is that local governments do have certain leeway to enact their own policies. Of course, they can't discriminate or violate the Constitution, just as the federal government can't, but they do have some leeway to enact policies that will protect against racial profiling, against abuses of constitutional rights, and favoring the protection of immigrants. The federal government is always going to have exclusive jurisdiction to enforce immigration laws, but as far as the treatment of immigrants and whether or not they're profiled and whether or not they're picked up by local police, that depends on local power and local communities.
The second part of the report addresses legal and constitutional rights against racial profiling. Joanna Cuevas Ingram, associate counsel at Latino Justice Pearl Def, says more than 1,000 hate crimes have been reported since Election Day.
And there were widespread fears of racial profiling and mass deportations, and I think many folks are concerned, particularly Dreamers and students and parents of students seeking a pathway to citizenship and inclusion here in the United States and equality here in the United States. The report notes there are over 400 jurisdictions right now working to provide a pathway to inclusion, at least at the local level, to show that wherever you come from, whatever your background, if you're here and you're living in our city or our county or our jurisdiction in several, in four cases, four states, right, in California, Rhode Island, Connecticut, and Vermont. So if you're living in these regions, then you are welcome, and you should be treated as an equal.
In December, an organization calling itself New Sanctuary for Immigrants of the Capital Region stormed Albany City Hall prior to a Common Council meeting to ensure Albany would be a safe haven for the undocumented. The city actually already appears on listings of sanctuary cities, and Mayor Kathy Sheehan has said on more than one occasion that Albany is a sanctuary city, where police have already been told if they should stop anyone not to ask for that individual's immigration status. Earlier that month, Sheehan spoke to a crowd gathered for an anti-KKK presidency freedom rally in Townsend Park and confirmed that anyone stopped by city police will not be questioned regarding legal status. She reiterated her position last week.
Albany is a sanctuary city, but that's a term that is not really been well defined. And so I think it's great that the Attorney General has released guidelines along with legal analysis with respect to what is just really common sense policies. When somebody calls the police, they shouldn't worry that they're going to be asked about their immigration status. When somebody's pulled over by the police, they shouldn't worry that they're going to be asked about their immigration status. If they come to City Hall to transact business, we shouldn't be inquiring about immigration status. That's a federal job of the federal government, and I think it's really important that we make sure that people know this is a welcoming city. This is a place where we have people from all over the world who come here, and they should feel that they're welcomed and they should feel safe.
Governor Andrew Cuomo has called New York a place of refuge. Citing what he labels Trump's draconian immigration policies, Schneiderman says public safety depends on trust between law enforcement and communities. The Trump administration is moving to require sanctuary cities to cooperate with federal laws. The December 2016 resolution before the Common Council reaffirming Albany's human rights stance and A.G. Schneiderman's 20-page legal guideline for communities looking to offer sanctuary provisions can be viewed at WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York State leads the nation in cases of Legionnaire's disease. The disease, which can spread through drinking water, is caused by bacteria and can be fatal. Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard reports advocates gathered at the Capitol in Albany this week with support from celebrated environmentalist Aaron Brockovich.
In 2016, 718 New Yorkers contracted Legionnaire's disease. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, that number is higher than any other recorded number in the U.S., followed by Ohio, California, Pennsylvania, and Florida. Advocates called attention to the issue at a press conference inside the legislative office building at the New York State Capitol on Tuesday. A new report authored by the Alliance to Prevent Legionnaire's Disease examined an outbreak in the South Bronx in the summer of 2015. The outbreak prompted state and city officials to enact emergency regulations, but the group says the regulations are ineffective and that the disease has remained an issue in New York City and across the state. The lung disease can be spread through drinking water systems. However, Darren Klein, spokesperson for the Alliance, said the good news is infections can be reduced through certain actions.
Programs can be put in place to more effectively disinfect our public water systems, upgrade our water system infrastructure to reduce increasing biofilm risks, publicly announce system failures and events that trigger bacterial releases within 24 hours. Investigate all cases of Legionnaire's disease using CDC tools for single cases. Positively identify the source of Legionella after the investigation.
Klein was joined by the Allergy and Asthma Network and renowned environmental advocate Aaron Brockovich.
I'm not here today to point the finger at any one entity or person. That is not going to help any of us. I'm here in support today of their mission, Legionnaire's disease in New York, and how many times we've worked with this.
Brockovich also made a stop in the region last year when she met with Hoosick Falls residents living with chemically contaminated drinking water. Brockovich said environmental regulations without enforcement are pointless. She introduced Bob Bocock of Integrated Resource Management, Inc., a California-based water quality consulting firm.
You didn't have this outbreak because it started yesterday. This has been building and going on for a while. So these are the numbers of reported outbreaks from the state of New York starting in 2011.
Yeah, in 2011, you had 616, 12, 502, 13, 756, 14, 625, 2015, 846, and 16, 718. There you go.
That says to me there's been lack of enforcement.
It's not just New York that does not require all municipalities to test for the bacteria. Bocock said there's no federal law on the books either.
Until somebody dies of it, somebody does an autopsy, somebody identifies the Legionella, then they'll go looking and they'll blame it on something unrelated. Somebody was using a dirty humidifier. Somebody, you know, didn't maintain their shower properly. It's coming from the public drinking water system. We do not regulate from the source to the tap in this country, and it's got to start, and it's got to start now.
There's a link to the report from the Alliance to Prevent Legionnaire's Disease at WAMC.org. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program numbers 1704 or just listen to podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.